Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Northeast Pennsylvania, it's Rob O'Donnell here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. You can get us anywhere you get your favorite podcast. Just search The Rob O'Donnell Show, and you can play us live on your smart speakers. Just ask it to play WILK News Radio, and you'll get us live. How's everyone doing on the second day of Armageddon, the government shutdown 2025? It's 308, 68 degrees on this Thursday, October 2nd, 2025. So I was checking the news today, and I actually heard some good news today in the light of the shutdown. I heard that some of our local politicians with our national politicians got together to make sure that our area's effects of the government shutdown in some ways would be less impacted. So I'm happy to bring on County Commissioner Chris Chermak right now from Lackawanna County. Commissioner, thanks for joining the show today.
Thank you, Rob. Happy to be here.
All right. So you yesterday, while the government shutdown was kind of being absorbed by everyone, and your colleague was during the commissioner's meeting this week pointing fingers, of course, at the Trump administration, forgetting that we're 4 months without a budget here. He did mention it, but kind of glanced over the no budget in Pennsylvania, which affects the county a lot more than this shutdown does. But you saw something here locally with our national parks that does affect us, and you acted upon it. So tell us a little bit about what you saw and what you did.
Well, so our trolley museum is on the property of the Steamtown Historic Site, you know, where all the trains are. So when they're closed, we're closed. But we have a new director, Chris Calvi, that runs our trolley museum. He took over for Wayne Hiller that passed away. Chris is doing a great job, and he called me with concerns that, you know, with all the schools that are coming and the trips and everything that's going on, we got a problem. So he's been talking with the new director of Steamtown, which we work well with, and they were trying to come up with a solution. Well, immediately Monday morning, I got on the phone with Rob Bresnahan, our congressman, and he went to work with his team. And Monday night or Monday afternoon, we were told that the trolley museum would get a waiver and we could open. So that was just nice because, again, we have the kids coming and with the excursions and everything, that's a hard thing to lose out on. But
yeah, you said there were a lot of bus trips planned, so you have all that already in planning and things to do, and we didn't want to get that held up.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, again, same thing. I'm sure there were plans for Steamtown to be open as well and have trips and things, but they can't get a waiver. But since that we're on the property and technically they own the building that we're in, but we were able to get the waiver. And, again, thanks to Rob and his team for making the effort, making the calls and whatever they had to do behind the scenes to help us reopen. So we're open and I'm thrilled about that.
It was great work to show that coordination between a local politician and a national politician that covers our area working together, their teams working together to do something that benefits everybody. Because these kids, these groups that come to the Steamtown site, you know, they're not Democrats, they're not Republicans. A lot of times you said there are a lot of kids and school trips headed to there to the day. But, you know, cut through the chase for them to make sure they had a great experience visiting the location.
Well, it is. And everybody knows, you know, the financial struggles that we have here in the county. And that's a revenue generator for us. So it's very important for us to be open. I mean, there's a lot of tourists that visit. And, you know, it's an important part of our daily grind here. So, you know, I was just happy that we could all work this out, and everybody worked together and we got it done. But, you know, again, I just appreciate that I can pick up my phone at 7 o'clock in the morning and call Rob, and you know, he's always answers the phone on the first or second ring, and he does whatever he can do. So it's just great to have him available.
Yeah, I know that the Democrats, I've seen a bunch of them on TV today saying that the Republican Congress have all gone home, and that's just not the case. I know for a fact Congressman Bresnahan is in Washington. As a matter of fact, he was arriving there the other day when he was calling in to us to give us an update on the shutdown. So he is indeed there with his team making sure they can do as much as they can.
Absolutely. No question. He is there. Yep.
Some other things. There's a lot going on in county business. There was sort of what I considered a bombshell. It kind of came out of nowhere during the commissioner meeting this week, where your counterpart, Commissioner Gaughan, said that the county commissioners don't need to certify the reassessment at all, that that's done by the assessor's office, the director of assessment, Mr. Tobin, and that there's really nothing left to do as far as the assessment when it comes to the commissioner's duty in seeing it go through.
Yes. Correct. However, the commissioners do have the ability to halt the process. But now we are, you know, when it was initiated back when they voted for that, which I did not, it was during the middle of the pandemic. But as soon as
actually, no sitting commissioner voted for the reassessment whatsoever. It was all done prior to you guys, and you were there, but you did not vote for it.
Correct. But so that is incorrect, that the commissioners can step in and just tell our director, Pat Tobin at the assessor's office that, you know, hold on, we got to make some corrections here. And, you know, I've done everything humanly possible as a commissioner to try to just give us a little bit more time and give these residents more time. There's so many people that are confused, don't know what to do. And I can tell you right now, when those bills hit, that's going to be chaos, not what Bill Gaughan says. He thinks it's going to be chaos if we try to stop it. No, it's going to be chaos when the bills come out.
Yeah, I think that because, listen, I've brought it up here a couple of times. When I look at my reassessment, because I've received it and I've looked at it, and there is a public county website where you can see your reassessment and search for your property. I'm within $200 of where, let's say, Zillow says that my house should be. So I look at it and I go, okay, well, Zillow says my house is worth this. This is what the reassessment says. And I say, okay, well, we'll see where it goes because I don't know the millage. I don't have any estimate where that's going to go. Depending on how the rest of the county does is where I'll fall tax-wise. And at that point, I'll have a better grasp on what I need to do. But when I see that too, and then I check other people like Commissioner Gaughan's house and Pat Tobin's house and their solicitor's house and Matt McGloin's house, because his was done while he was still the commissioner, they're $30,000 to $50,000 assessed less than what, say, Zillow says. And that makes me wonder. That makes me speculate. Well, and could it just be... Go ahead.
No, I'm not disagreeing. It's just, you know, I would have to even look at my own. But, you know, there, I have looked at previous sales on what the house has sold for just recently, and they've sold for less than what the Zillow estimate was. So, I mean, it's all a guide. It's just when I was in the car business, when you're appraising a used car, it's you use the blue book as a guide. So, you know, again, Zillow's not buying these houses. They're generating a number. And again, I'm not disagreeing. It's just that's not really, you know, I don't know. A house or a vehicle or anything else is worth whatever.
Whatever willing someone's willing to pay for it, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's whatever they agree on. But, you know, my concerns were, you know, he brought up yesterday about if we push this back, that the values are going to be stale and the information's not going to be, it'll be a year older. Well, we were only allowed to use it between June of 22 to July of 23 or whatever the dates were. I can't even remember at this point. But as far as I'm concerned, we should have been able to use current sales, not sales that were a year or 2 years old. So to me, that was a mistake from the beginning, but that's what they did.
Well, that's also the misnomer when they says, and he keeps saying that there hasn't been a reassessment in 60 years. Well, there hasn't been a county-wide reassessment in 60 years, but every time a house sells in Lackawanna County, it's reassessed at that value.
Well, it's new houses are assessed at whatever value, and some of them are, you know, they're a little high. But yeah, there's been spot assessments that have been done, if that's what you want to call them.
Well, when you purchase a house or when a house sells in Lackawanna County, that your tax bill is based on what your house sold for at that time. So if someone bought a house three years ago, their house is a tax at that. Now, the millage rate doesn't change because that's the same.
Right. Well, there's, again, I'm not disputing that the county doesn't need a reassessment, and I know you're not either. But my concern was it's got to be done correctly. We've gotten this far. I'm not saying they did a terrible job. They didn't do a great job. And it certainly isn't perfect, but we need time to sift through all these numbers and make sure everybody gets a fair shake. And my opinion is we're not. So, you know, and that's the argument I have every week, every month with the commissioner meetings. And, you know, it falls on deaf ears, you know, but here we are.
Yeah, one of the things I saw why they didn't give an estimate of what your taxes may be, he said that the experts that do this, some of the experts that do this, say that it's not best practice to give people an estimate and say, hey, this is only an estimate because it gives people false promise or false information, and it just sometimes hinders the process. And I get that. But other counties do it. It seemed to work better for the people in that county to accept and understand what's going on more. But I look at it like this. You want to talk about best practices. In California, let's look at liberal California. A couple of years ago, they passed a Proposition 1, which said that your home taxes could only be based on what you bought your house for. So if you owned your house for 30, 40 years, you were paying taxes for what you bought your house 30, 40 years ago, because municipalities, counties, townships were doing reassessments as money grabs. Now, I understand that ours has to be revenue neutral, and that was a question that I got, and I forwarded to you, and thank you for that answer. I know it needed to be revenue neutral for the county, but I wasn't sure about the school districts and the townships and municipalities. You said that it needs to be revenue neutral for everyone.
It's revenue neutral. Now, there is a little caveat there for the school districts because they budget differently. So if, you know, and that gets very confusing, and I certainly don't have the expertise to explain this whole thing, but if they're budgeting for the current year, the reassessment year, they cannot raise taxes. So
one of the other things that I recently found out, and I just don't get this at all, is the election board, which is commonly the three county commissioners, yourself, Commissioner Gaughan, and it was Matt McGloin, but Judge Nealon was put in there because there was a vacancy for Matt McGloin. The president judge, Judge Gibbons, recently removed both you and Commissioner Gaughan, so all county commissioners, and put on a slate of all judges now?
Right. Yes, they did.
Now, the law, the way I read it, says that the election board shall, and shall is a very important word in legal terms, be apprised of the county commissioners unless they are on the ballot, which neither of you are, or there's a home rule charter question, which is not on the ballot. What do we have a grasp on what the President Judge Gibbons has done to put all judges on this panel now, this board?
I can't speak for the judge, and I really don't know. I think the reason that drove that decision was the influence that Commissioner Gaughan has been trying to force upon these decisions, whether to parade somebody in front he wants to pick the next commissioner. Or before we even started that process, I remember him saying that, oh, we can't have a special election because it was illegal. But that changed quickly when he didn't like the candidate that they picked. So I think because of all that, all those issues and everything that was going on, that's when the judge decided. I mean, that's just my guess. I really don't know, but that's how I feel about it.
All right. And that's one of the other things I wanted to close on. It was interesting to watch Commissioner Gaughan. This entire late process in this is fully embraced, letting the people have their voice in this with a special election. But like you said, the first couple of months, you know, March, April, May, him and his solicitor were very adamant that it was illegal to have a special election. Again, until he did not get who he wanted. He didn't like the slate of picks. He tried to pick his own person, saying, well, as the majority commissioner, I should be able to pick who my person is. And then there was that discrepancy, which was based in absolutely nothing. It went back to the slate of three that the committee chooses, the Democrat committee. And when he didn't like that, all of a sudden embraced the special election.
Yeah. Well, and here's the other part, and I mentioned a commissioner's meeting, but again, it gets overlooked and, you know, swept away. But, you know, he talked about the people being picked in smoke-filled back rooms, the replacements, and, well, guess what? The candidates that are picked by the committees. So nothing changed. They're picked by the same people and put forward. Now that's who's on the ballot. So, you know, whether they're smoke-filled rooms or not, that's who picks the candidate. So the public really doesn't get a say. They get to vote for a Republican or a Democrat, but they don't get to go through a primary and pick their best candidate. So, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors that I deal with every day.
It is, because, again, as he's pointing fingers at his own Democrat committee about smoke-filled back rooms, there he was in his own room picking one person to come out and parade, like you said, in a county facility and saying, hey, here's my pick, who's not even running and didn't even put their name into the hat.
Right, right. So let's hope that the voters step up. And, you know, nothing would make me happier to see Chet Murley, the nephew of the great Geno Murley, be our next commissioner. That would be great. He's the Republican. And he's a great friend and a good person. He's very smart. So he knows how to deal with budgets, and he knows what he's doing. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, after a 33% tax increase that didn't wake the people of Lackawanna County up, and now this reassessment, which I think when people start getting that bill, it will start to wake people up, because a lot of people, as you've said, our elderly, our people on fixed incomes are going to be hurting when it comes to this. And I think a lot of people are going to get a big surprise when they get that tax bill. If that doesn't wake up the voters of Lackawanna County, I don't know where we go from there.
I agree. I am almost to the point, I'm sick of banging my head against the wall, but I fight every day. And I fight for everyone, not just one side or one party. This is unfair, and no one should lose their home or become homeless because of a tax. That shouldn't be, you know, it's wrong. And we need safeguards. I've been saying that. Nobody wants to listen. So we'll see.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
We'll see how things go, but I'm out there and I'm trying every day to do the best I can.
To try and end on a good note here, and we started off with a good note with you and Congressman Bresnahan working to keep one of our facilities here open. Is there any talk about helping our most vulnerable? I don't want to ask for specifics or anything like that, but is there some kind of conversation between you and Commissioner Gohanna saying, hey, we really need to do something for these people who are really going to be affected? Has he realized that? Has he said, well, let's sit down and talk about something?
Nope.
All right.
Nope. Unfortunately. But I'll keep fighting for that, too.
All right, Commissioner Chris Chermak, Lackawanna County. I appreciate the updates on a whole plethora of things because there's a lot of moving parts here as we get towards the end of the year. And budget season is, there's going to be a presentation next week, right?
Correct, yes. Yep, next week. So we'll see what kind of a show we put on there.
All right, Commissioner, thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show today and give us an update.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for everything.
All right. It's 3:25 here at WILK. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. While I was talking to Commissioner Chermak, I did get a text message and said my house came back at $412,000. I called the company and they gave me the comparables they used. One property was not in Pennsylvania, one was not in Dixon City, and the three other ones had already recently been sold between $212,000 and $235,000. I said, how can my property be worth $412,000 when you're showing me comparables at almost $200,000 less? My real estate agent gave me real comparables from my neighborhood that sold within the last year. I presented it to them, and they lowered my assessed value by $60,000. I believe I'm much closer to reality now that I was in the initial reassessment. So it just goes to show, you know, if you have questions and you don't think you're in the right ballpark. And I think a lot of people are going to get a wake-up call when they actually get that tax bill. I think that's when people are actually going to start to really move on things. One of the things that Commissioner Gaughan keeps touting is how little people are challenging their assessment. Well, that's because a lot of people don't know. A lot of people really don't pick through the weeds. They look at their house value, like I said. I looked at my house value. I looked at what the market, both REMAX and Zillow and stuff, estimated my house within $200. So I said, all right, maybe I'm in the ballpark. But then I look at other people, like I mentioned, whose houses are $40,000, $50,000 assessed less. Well, how's that going to work out in the wash in the end? That's where it starts to get to hairy. If I looked at other homes and they were in the same ballpark, I'd be like, all right, if we're all reassessed where we should be, then whatever the millage is, it is. But I'm sorry, I have a trust factor when it comes to Lackawanna County. I think we all should. And when I see every single person in leadership that I check from Lackawanna County and their homes are under-assessed between $30,000 and $60,000, well, I'm sorry, it raises questions. And it could be a coincidence, but do we believe in that much of a coincidence? And I even went a step further and checked some non-county local officials, and one of them's house was assessed $10,000 more than Zillow is saying their house is worth. Since they're not a part of Lackawanna County, but they do work in Lackawanna County as a top elected official, you know, there's really no reason to say who that is, but if I was them, I'd appeal my assessment. So that's where we're at there. It is 5:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Well, there's a couple of things today that will wind you up if you're not a fan of me or the show. Meta, Facebook, reached out to me today and asked me if I'd be interested in being a fact-checker community note person on the Facebook platform. As to if I see any posts that are misinformation that I can add a community note to. I guess they've been monitoring the stuff that I put out there and figure, hey, if you're going to fact-check your own area, you might as well fact-check Facebook. But that is going to drive my haters nuts. So welcome to Facebook. That being said, AOL dial-up internet has taken its last bow. It is no longer, making it an end of an era. And I think most of us, I would imagine, started AOL. Jake, did you ever use AOL dial-up with the modem sound and tone? And yeah, he did. It hasn't been around that long. I mean, think about it. You know, most of the stuff we use today were invented during our lifetime. It rose to a prominence in the late 90s, early 2000s, so not too long ago. And it is no longer. AOL, formerly America Online, introduced many households to the World Wide Web. I remember, I had the the play computers. What was it, the Commodore 64 when I was really young and stuff like that. But my first real computer was when I purchased my house in Long Island and figured, hey, we got to enter the age, and bought a computer. And it did have, there you go, welcome. There's the sound you used to get and used to remember when it connected. And it was slow. Remember downloading a song from what was that? What was that website? The song, the music website.
Napster.
Napster, where it took you like 25 minutes to download a song. It was great times, my friend, great times. And it really used to pick up a free CD or email. That was the best way to do it because then you didn't have to take a whole night to download it. But AOL dial-up is no longer. It had its last bit of freedom just a few days ago and is now disconnected from the World Wide Web. So no more AOL.com. And it truly is. I mean, you think about it. Verizon sold AOL in 2021. An anonymous source familiar with the transaction told CNBC that the number of AOL dial-up users was in the low thousands, down from 2.1 million. When Verizon first moved to acquire AOL in 2015, and far below the peak demand seen in the 90s and 2000s. But beyond dial-up, AOL continues to offer free email service as well as subscription that advertise identity protection and other tech support. How many of us still, Jake, you have an AOL address still, email? No?
No, mine's gone.
I still have mine. And it's funny because every time I give it, because I use it for things I don't care if spam or stuff goes to. You're normally like online shopping and stuff like that. But anytime I use it, someone's like, really? Don't worry. I have more modern encrypted ones. But yep, we still have it. And I still use it from time to time. Not AOL dial-up, but the AOL platform as far as email goes. But it's gone. So no more of that. It is 3:40 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Got to let that play a little bit. It is 3:43, 69 degrees here on this Thursday, October 2nd. Week's almost done. So PP&L, we discussed this yesterday when there was a, I told you to be on the alert, there was a half-page ad taken out by PP&L, and that's never good. But PP&L is seeking nearly a 7% rate increase on electric bills. Months after increasing electric bills 16% on the generation end, PP&L Electric Utilities is seeking an increase on the distribution end now. PP&L Electric Utilities has asked the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission, the PUC, to increase distribution rates for residential customers by 6.98%. The company announced in a notice to customers on its website, and they also published it. I put a copy of that notice on my Facebook yesterday. On a power bill, generation charges cover the cost of producing the electricity, while distribution charges cover the cost of delivering electricity to homes and businesses through the power lines and equipment. If the increase is approved by the PUC, the average residential customer using 1,000 kilowatt hours of electricity would their bill increase from $191.49 to $204.86 per month, the company says. PP&L is also requesting an increase commercial user bills by 5.31% and industrial customers by 2.53%. Yes, let's stick it to the residential ones more, right? Almost double than the industrial, more than double than the industrial customers. In order for the hikes to be approved, PP&L must prove that the requested rates are reasonable, the company's notice said. After examining the evidence, the PUC may grant all, some, or none of the request, or it may be reduced, or it may reduce existing rates. PP&L is making the request to make necessary investments to build and maintain a stronger, smarter, and more resilient electric grid to better withstand increasing severe weather, prevent outages, and improve services to customers, the company said in a press release. Or are they just looking to fund their upgrades for their big old data centers on the backs of you and I, the residential customers? Could be a mix of both, don't you think? I would say. Again, another entity with a little trust value there. The company said that this was its first request for a rate hike on the distribution end in a decade. The last distribution rate hike went into effect on January 1st, 2016. But again, last year they asked for an increase on the generation end. So, you know, when you divide your electric bill into two halves and, you know, say we're going to ask for an increase on this half this year and then this half on that year and then this half on a few years later, you know how it goes. We understand the rising costs of living and affordability matter to every family and business we serve, and we've been committed to keeping the costs we can control down. Over the past decade, we've deployed advanced technologies to operate more efficiently, invest responsibly in the grid, and expand assistance programs to support those who need help paying their energy bills. To continue providing our customers with safe and reliable electric service, we need to make important investments in our system. PPL has nearly 47,000 miles of distribution lines, 1 million utility poles, hundreds of substations, and thousands of pieces of equipment that need to be maintained and upgraded. We're requesting a rate adjustment to support these necessary improvements and help ensure power stays on, especially as severe weather becomes more common, they said. That's interesting because, you know, we have a rash of dead ash trees across Pennsylvania, across the Commonwealth. And they are all along bordering the power lines. Matter of fact, just across the street from my house, there's probably 10. All dead. Pieces of them come down. As a matter of fact, one of them is laying on the power line and cable line and probably phone line. Yeah, there's phone line, Verizon. And I've called them numerous times. I've stopped them when they've been there for power outages because my power has been out. And I can only talk about me, but I've seen it on the map as well. It seems like every storm we get now, power's out for a little bit because of these dead trees falling on the power lines. That's mostly what they're causing now from what I've seen. And again, just in my area. But they will do nothing proactively to take those trees down. They wait till they come down and take power out, rather than spending a little less money than paying someone on overtime or emergency crews to get out there during a storm, which is more dangerous for their employees, than send people out on nice days to cut down the dead trees. And probably leave them, because ash trees, even if they're dead, are good burning wood. You know, leave them there for whoever wants to come in the right of way and take them, or the homeowner who owns the property that the lines run through to use the wood. If they don't want to use it, someone else come along and use it. But at least they're not dead up in danger to not only stopping traffic, because again, if they take the power lines down, a lot of times they're ending up in the road too. And it's interesting because as these trees come down, I've called the companies and they'll come and look at it. And like I said, there's the power lines, the cable lines, and Verizon lines where I am. And if the tree is on the Verizon lines and the cable company or the electric company get there, they say, well, we can't take that tree down because it's on the Verizon lines. Okay, but your lines are right under there. So when it finally snaps the Verizon lines, it's on yours. Well, then we can come out and do something. And I've literally had Verizon come out and cut the tree off their line to where it's resting on the cable line or the power line, to then have to call that company to come out and finally do something about it. And only if there's a disruption. Well, if there's a big tree leaning on your line, I would imagine there's going to be a disruption sooner or later, don't you think? But yet, instead of proactively going out there and doing anything, and I know I've had you guys text me here who have been part of that to say, nope, PPL will never be proactive. They're only responsive when it comes to those sort of calls. And that's why power's out all the time. Do we still have time for Bloomberg there, Jake? Yeah, let's go to Bloomberg. You're with the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio. Well, it looks like there's some dissension going on at the Crestwood School District. The Crestwood special counsel appointment has prompted a lawsuit from a school board candidate. Now, I understand some of this, but I don't understand why there's not even a little transparency here. The Crestwood Board of Education appointed a special counsel at a special meeting this week, Monday, for an undisclosed purpose and at an undetermined hourly rate or maximum total cost. Now, that's where I have an issue. Denouncing what they see as an undue clarity, several Crestwood residents called on the school board members to detail what motivated the appointment. And one school board candidate has sued her potential colleagues, alleging violations of the state transparency laws. It's a very vague item. I believe it's a violation of the Sunshine Act, said Nancy Romanshine, who won a place on the Democrat and Republican Party ticket for the Crestwood School Board in the May primary. Because, again, this is a public entity and you have been elected to represent us, but we still have the right to see the information. Well, sometimes you do. And here's where I agree and disagree here. She warned the school board that she would sue if it went through with the appointment, which they did, so maybe she sues. She alleges the school board failure to provide detail of the special counsel appointment violates the rights of herself and a Crestwood residents to review and comment on proposed board action as guaranteed by the Sunshine Act. The suit asks that the court annul the appointment. Now, the Sunshine and Transparency Acts of Pennsylvania have criterias. There are certain things that do not, safety issues, legal issues, personnel issues. And that appears what this is. An attorney with the firm of the regular Crestwood solicitor did say Monday that the hiring of a special counsel, Frank Tunis Esquire, involved both prospective litigation and personnel matters. And given those conditions, the district could disclose no further information. A request for comment left on the phone for the special counsel was not returned. Now, these are exceptions to the Sunshine Act. Litigation, ongoing litigation or prospective litigation, or personnel matters. They do not have to disclose the details on that. But by saying what they're paying the special counsel per hour and what the maximum cost they're authorizing is, that should be told to the taxpayers, don't you think? And I fully agree here that they should respect the personnel issues and ongoing litigation. If there is ongoing or expected litigation, no, those things are protected from the Sunshine Act. Those things are supposed to be kept confidential and private for obvious reasons, both litigation, potential litigation, or personnel issues. But I don't see how saying, hey, this is what we've decided to pay them an hour per hour for their services up until this cost doesn't jeopardize the personnel anonymity or the legal issue whatsoever. So I don't agree there with that. And hopefully, instead of a lawsuit and tax dollars for the school district getting spent on needless litigation, they should just meet with the people who are asking for this information, say, okay, under the Sunshine Act, here are the exceptions. Personnel reasons, litigation for safety and security reasons. Sometimes things aren't put out published. And those are valid exceptions to the Sunshine Act. There's a whole list of exceptions to the Sunshine Act if you look at the law. But, okay, here's what we have agreed to and approved to pay per hour up until this amount. And, for clarity on the expense part of that. And if we change that or if it has to be extended or voted on again above and beyond that, we'll obviously have to call a special meeting and do that. And again, not be able to disclose the personnel issues or the litigation end, but okay, we're increasing the hours by such amount of hours, or the threshold, which was $20,000, is now $50,000. That kind of keeps the public in the loop monetarily. And listen, that's the job of the school district, the school board, the fiduciary duty of running the school. So I do think that should be disclosed, and hopefully the adults in the room, being at a school board, can sit down and come to that agreement rather than needless litigation on all sides, because no one wins there, especially the taxpayer. So as I agree that the personnel issues and litigation should not be disclosed in detail to anything, what they're paying per hour and the cap threshold on that, I think is very valid to give to the public. It's 4 o'clock here at WILK.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.